Yeah, so what I want to do today is to talk about this concept of genuine multipartite non-locality or genuine multipartite entanglement. And what I will try to do is to propose a new definition of that concept, which introduces a bit of communication. So I will explain what it means. So I will start my talk just by presenting what is this notion intuitively. And I will use this kind of terminology. So I will say that in quantum theory, you have nice states, but you also have very nice states. And I will explain what I mean by this. So for me, nice state will just be states which, for instance, can violate a Bell inequality. So in quantum theory, we know that we have non-locality, we have entangled state. So there exists, for instance, a bipartite quantum system of two photons, which has no classical physics interpretation. And you have two ways, actually, to see this. One is using the mathematical formalism of quantum theory. So you look at the density matrix, which describe your state, and you see that you cannot write it as a convex mixture of independent matrices corresponding to the system for each of the parties. So we call this device dependent, and we also have a device independent definition in which now we just perform some experiment from that state. We obtain some probability distribution of outputs given inputs, and we see that this probability distribution cannot be interpreted in terms of a local hidden variable model. So those two definitions are a bit different, but in my talk I will ignore these differences and just, well, loosely speaking, I will just say that such a state is a nice state, okay? And it's a resource for many applications. So beyond this property, intuitively, many physicists think that there is more non-classicality in quantum theory than just this property of entanglement or non-locality. So especially in this state, for instance, so the GZ state, which mathematically we write like this, we believe that it's qualitatively stronger in terms of non-classicality than anything I can construct out of this kind of state. So if you want this state, we say that the non-locality, the non-classicality shared by Alice, Bob, Charlie, and Dave has nothing to do qualitatively, is qualitatively stronger than what I can observe when I do stuff like this. Or even if I do something like this in which I have three maximally entangled states, bipartite, and Bob maybe owns two particles. Okay? But so for now, I have no definition, and of course, if you say this, you need to give a concrete definition. So I will call such a state a very nice state, and the question will be how to define this property. And so a bit more technically, we can have the device-dependent version of it, in which we'll say that the state is four genuine multipartite entangled, or the device-independent notion of it, in which it will be non-local, but okay, so. Again, I would say that it's just a very nice state. So why doing this? So I guess there are two reasons why you would like to introduce this notion. So first, okay, if you have this intuition, does it correspond to a clear mathematical definition? And what does it mean? And what you can ask once you have a concrete mathematical definition, you can try to see whether there exist alternative theories which would only introduce nice state, and this we know that you need because of Bell theorem, right? You cannot explain correlations with a local hidden variable model, so you need to introduce this nice state. But you can ask the question, okay, can I construct a theory which would only have nice state and not very nice state given your definition, okay? And then actually these definitions are used a lot for concrete applications, so there are a lot of references, so these are just five, but the literature about this is huge. So there are a lot of people in experimental physics creating some experimental device and then trying to prove the fact that their device is genuine multipartite non-local or genuine multipartite entangled. And this property is really seen as a benchmark toward some concrete useful quantum system. So it's very hard to create a quantum system which is useful. And what they do is just to use this property as a benchmark. Okay, my system has genuine multipartite non-classicality, so it's already quite good, even if I don't know how to use it to do something concrete. So this tells us that we really have to see this property as a contest between an experimentalist and a referee, in which, so you have an experimentalist who would maybe on day one create a system, right, and pretend that this system contains a nice state. And then you have a referee coming, looking at the device, and trying to certify that indeed there is a nice state in the device. And then, so the referee has in mind an alternative model, which is just a local hidden variable model in which I can interpret A and B as two separated particles. And then the experimentalist will very easily convince the referee that indeed it is a nice state. For this, you just, for instance, violate a Bell inequality or an entanglement weakness. So this is on day one, and this is very clear how you do it. And then imagine now that on day two, the experimentalist comes back and says that, okay, now he does not have a nice state anymore. He has a very nice state. So something which has nothing to do with the nice state, which is way better in some way. So again, I did not give any definition. I will next slide. But the question here is how to define a very nice state. So the good question to ask is, what is the alternative model the referee has in mind and wants to rule out? Okay. So now I will go through existing definitions for this alternative model, and I will discuss them. So there is a historical definition of what are very nice states. And the intuition behind is the following. So now imagine that the experimentalist created a tripartite state. What the referee wants to rule out is an explanation in which you would have some nice state between two particles, plus some spectator particle which is completely unrelated from it. And maybe it's just a convex mixture of this. So you want to rule this, for sure, out. You also want to rule out a situation in which now it's B and C, which are entangled, and A is independent. You also want to rule out this situation. And in the end, you just say, OK, I want just to rule out a superposition of these three possibilities. So this is the historical definition of what it is to be a very nice state. Okay. So again, you have the device independent, the device independent version of it. But okay, at high level, this is the idea. And so actually, you have many problems with this definition when you look at concrete experiment. And so I will explain why with a counterexample after. But for me, the problem with this definition is that this underlying model is not exactly what you would like to rule out as a referee, because given what the experimentalist could do on day one, there are a lot of stuff he could do on day two just reusing the experiment on day one. And especially what he could do is to just duplicate his experiment he obtained on day one and perform a new experiment. So this new experiment is just using this phi plus state, which he was able to do on day one, and just create a duplicate of the same experiment, which also create a phi plus state. So now you have two sources of phi plus. So you just have to see this as a source of two photon. And then you send one photon to Alice and one photon to Bob from the first source, and one photon to Bob and one photon to Charlie from the second source. So you obtain an overall state, which is this, where Bob owns two photon. And according to this definition, this is a very nice state. Okay, so the referee, accepting this definition as the definition of very nice state, will say, okay, so what the experimentalist has constructed on day two is something which is genuinely different from what he obtained on day one. And this is quite problematic, actually, in many experimental contexts. And there is another problem about this, which is that you have some fine tuning. So this is a bit more technical, but if you look at this decomposition, this term might be signaling. But in the end, when you take the average, this is washed out because there is no more signaling in this. And there is no clear reason why this is the case, why you consider this concrete model. Okay, so now I will go to a recent redefinition, which is the following. So there is some redefinition which was recently proposed, which is just saying that my state, I don't want it. So maybe it's easier to look at this. So I will just take sources of two photons, which can be created by the experimentalist on day one. And now I will just consider a setup like this, in which I just use duplicate of these sources and I share them between each pair of parties. So this is A, B, and C. And these parties also have access to some shared randomness. And then if you are party A, you will receive a photon from that source, a photon from that source, and also some, you will be correlated by some shared randomness, and you will just apply some local operation to output a system. And then the global system is just what is outputted by each party. So this is based on local operation plus shared randomness. We call it LOSR. And I will say that a state is very nice if it cannot be explained by such a model. So again, I have the, this is entangled, this is non-local. I have the device dependent and the device independent version of it. And this solves directly this problem because trivially this state can be created in this model, so you will not say anymore that it's a very nice state. So there is a well-defined, motivated, underlying experimentary model. It's not fine-tuning. But actually, so I received a criticism about this model by Otfried Gunner, who worked a lot on this definition of genuine multipartite entanglement, non-locality, which is that it cannot model any kind of communication. So this is a concrete experimental system in which you have a Hamiltonian interaction between different atoms. So it's just a grid. You have one atom in each site like this. And they kind of interact with their nearest neighbor through this Hamiltonian interaction. And as a referee, it's maybe very natural to consider an alternative model in which the global state obtained is coming from like small particles which would exchange a bit of communication with their neighbors, okay? And of course, if you want to define a very nice state in this system using this, you are not modeling communication, and maybe it's something you should introduce in the alternative model you want to use. And actually, naively, if you look at Svetnici's model, you do have a notion of communication, because when I write this model, I say that there is this fine-tuning problem that this might be a signaling distribution. So naively in Svetnici's model, you don't say at all how it, where it comes from, you don't model it at all, but you include a notion of signaling, of communication. Okay, so let me go now to the proposition of a new concept in which I include a bit of communication to define the model of the referee. So this is very recent work, so we have not fixed the terminology, and maybe you have some criticism about it. So I'm very happy to hear about what you think about this new potential concept. Okay, so imagine that you have these particles, A, B, C, D, etc., and we'll think at it as a maybe 1D condensed matter system. So remember the drawing I had of an experiment. So now I have just particles one after the other on a line. Okay? And I have to define so this underlying alternative model of the referee. So I will use the following model. So first, I have to come up with a communication graph. So I will say that as the particle are a line on a line, well, they can communicate with their nearest neighbor. So this is the graph I consider. And then I will also define a number of communication steps they have access to. And then I will also introduce shared randomness. And I will say that my state is very nice, right, according to the graph J and with the number of communication T, if it cannot be obtained with shared randomness and T synchronized communication steps along J. So what happens in practice, so if I take T equals 1, is the following. So imagine you are B and you want collaboratively to create this state. What you will do is you will just create a three photon state. You will keep one photon. You will send one photon to Alice. You will send one photon to Charlie. And then you will process the photon you receive from Alice and Charlie. And you will, with a local operation, and you will just output something, and the global state is this row. So this is for t equals 1. And then for t equals 2, well, you will do this, right? So you create your photon, you receive your photon, you perform some local operation, this creates three new photons, and you send this back to your neighbors, you receive again photon, and you output something, okay? And then I can increase t like this, and I obtain more and more possibilities of state, okay? So it's quite clear that, for instance, if t is equal to n over 2, then the central party can create the state and just send the particles as far as he can and create any state like this, right? So if I take t equals n over 2, I can create any state in this way. So the question is how big? So this is the model of the referee, right? So I can also make some device-independent version of that. And then, so if I want to use this as an experimental benchmark, so I look at the experimental device. This gives me the graph I want to consider. And then I look at what is the smaller number of communication needed in order to be able to reproduce the state. And the larger this T star is, the nicer the state is. So if T star is equal to n over 2, I have the nicest state I can imagine. If T star is equal to 1, 2, I have a state which is not so nice. So actually, this model is directly inspired from the field of distributed computing. So what I have described there, this model, is exactly the local synchronous distributed computing model. So these are the states which can be computed in this model with T steps of communication. And there is a lot of literature about this framework. OK, so this is mainly conceptual. So now I will go a bit more into technical details, some results we obtain with this model. So I will try to compare a bit these three definitions. And I will concentrate over the 1D line graph. So there is first the GZ state. So intuitively, the GZ state is the state which should be the nicest we can imagine. Okay, and indeed, for these two definitions, it was proven that it is maximally nice in some way. So now what we have proven is that also in our definition, it is maximally nice because somehow to create it, you need the middle party of the chain to create the state and send the particles to everyone. Then there is this state, which was quite annoying in this definition, right? So in this definition, it's clear that it's not a nice state. And in our definition, it's also very clear that it's not, because each party will just create the phi plus, send it to the neighbor. So in t equals 1, you can, well, t equals 1, actually, you can do it. OK, so now we concentrated also over the cluster graph state. So I don't go at all into the details of what is this state. So it's just a natural state for physicists, which is created out of the graph, which is the line graph. So you graph states, you just take a graph, and there is a state which is associated to that graph. And if you take the line graph, 1D line graph, you obtain the cluster state. So this state is maximally nice in this definition. So what we have proven is that it is also maximally nice in this LOSR definition. So this is the most involved proof of our work. And it was found by, it's a very nice proof found by my co-authors, which generalizes this work, for instance. And then what is quite interesting is that this cluster state in this new definition with a bit of communication is not a nice state anymore. So if you have access to two steps of communication, it's very easy to prove that actually you can do it. You can reproduce it. And we improved a bit the result. But OK, what is important is that this state was very nice if you don't have at all access to communication, but you have this model. But it becomes very easy to produce if you have a bit of communication. And OK, we also have, as a corollary, some results about graph states. So it's maximally nice here. As a corollary, we can show that if in G you have a path of length M, then the state is M-partite, genuine multipartite, entangled, or non-local. So this completely generalizes this works. And also, it is known that it is trivial in that case. OK. So now I have some slides about these two technical proofs. So I will go quite quickly through the proof. The goal is more to, well, first to show that I have slides about the proof, so I'm happy to discuss it in detail after the talk. And also maybe to give an overview on the type of arguments we use, because actually the argument we use to prove these results are always more or less the same. So let me first make the proof of this. So what I want to prove is that, so if you have parties, so I give different names, but imagine that they share a GLZ state. What I want to prove is that if now they try to reproduce the correlation of this GLZ state, they need a lot of communication. There is no way to reproduce it with a small number of communication. And so what I will propose is just a concrete experiment to do with the GLZ state, which obtains some correlation, some probability distribution, which cannot be reproduced in my model with only few communication steps. So what I ask is that all the Charlie do some entanglement swapping measurement. And this, when I do that, it steer a maximally entangled state between Alice and Bob. So now Alice and Bob have a phi plus state, and I ask them first to do a CHSH game to obtain this 2√2. And I also ask them to play a second game, which is a shared random bit game. So they just measure in the Z measurement, and then they obtain maximally correlated outputs. And then, well, it is clear that if I look at this second game, so Alice and Bob are maximally correlated, this cannot come from the communication, because there is no enough step of communication to correlate Alice and Bob. So the unique way for them to obtain this shared random bit is to use this lambda. I have this formula, and so the correlation, the maximal correlation of this second game must come from the lambda. So it means that the output A on input Z, which corresponds to this shared bit with Bob, must come from lambda. So just looking at lambda, I can compute it. Okay. But we have a problem, because this AZ is also an output of the Bell violation. And there is something very important in quantum theory, which is what we call monogamy of non-locality or entanglement. If you have a Bell game, so if you have Alice and Bob violating this CHSH inequality, then the output of Alice in this game cannot be guessed by anyone else in the universe. Alice is the only person who knows what output she obtained at the Bell game. And this is not what's happening there, because this AZ, which is part of this Bell game, can also be guessed by someone just looking at lambda. And this is known to be completely impossible. So the GLZ state cannot be done. So I don't know how I'm doing with time. OK, so I will also go quickly through this proof. And I will do it only for the four-partite cluster state. So it's a state which I can write like this. And then so now the proof uses the inflation technique. And it's the following. So I first consider, so again, I consider parties sharing that state. And what I need to show you now is that it's not feasible in the second model I introduced. So the second model would be a model like this with also access to shared randomness. So the question is, can I reproduce the correlation of this cluster state with four tripartite sources like this? And I will show that it's impossible. So I first ask the party to perform these measurements. So you see this is my cluster state. So when I measure Z for Alice and Bob, first Alice and Bob obtains the same output, and they steer a phi plus or a phi minus to Charlie and Dave, who can perform a CHSH violation. So if I make these measurements, I will obtain a maximal score to these three games. Okay. And then I can use the inflation technique. So what I do is that I introduce a replica of that source, and I make this connection. Okay, I change the network. And now I can compare what happens here and there. So if I forget about C and D in the two networks, you see that I have exactly the same drawing. So by inflation, this implies that if AZ is equal to BZ in this experiment, AZ must be equal to BZ also in that experiment, because it's the same experiment somehow. It's okay, a standard inflation argument. It's the same as what Rob presented yesterday to say that the shared random bit distribution could not be done in the triangle scenario. And then I can also forget about B. And then I see again that the two drawings are exactly the same. And this part of the score, right, is not depending on B. So it should also be equal to 2 square root of 2 in this right-hand side. So what I have proven is that if there is a way to obtain AZ equal BZ and this inequality in this network, then when I draw this, I should also observe the same correlations. So I should have that. And then if I forget about this and I just look at this and that, I see that AZ is always equal to BZ. So it means that I can replace AZ by BZ. So I can deduce that. Okay. So it's quite remarkable because I started from three maximally violated games, and I can deduce that in this new network, they are still maximally violated. And then, so OK, I don't go into the details, but I can do this again to remove, like to disconnect this source by adding a replica. And I obtain also that I have this course. OK, so this is the first part of the proof. And then I have a second part of the proof. So I won't make it, but it's exactly the same idea. But now I look at these scores, which are maximally violated. So you see that if now I look at the state, CZ is always equal to DZ. And I also have these equalities. And I can disconnect again the sources one after the other. And I obtain, in the end, this and that in these two networks. And what I can do is just combine the two. So you see this part is the upper part, and this part is the lower part. And then just by looking at this and that, I deduce that I have, so first, C and D, which are maximally violating CHSH. And there is also the output of D, which can be guessed by A prime and B prime. And this is, again, a problem with monogamy. I have CHSH equal 2 square root of 2 between these two. But one of the output of D can be collaboratively guessed by these two parties, which is impossible because of monogamy. So again, it's an argument which is based on a combination of monogamy with a game where some party can guess one of the outputs. OK, so I'm done. So I propose this concept of communication-based redefinition of genuine multipartite entanglement not locality. We have some technical results about this definition. And OK, so the proposal behind is to use this for concrete experiments, saying that historical definitions are problematic. What is really important is to carefully think about the alternative model the referee wants to rule out. And this is the core problem. And this depends concretely on the experiment and what are your beliefs as a referee. OK, and with this, I thank my colleagues, so Xavier, Ovidius, Fionnula, and Remik.
Questions from online?
Yeah, so nice presentation, thanks. In general, it seems to be very difficult, right, to analyze just a generic state to see to which class it belongs, like how hard it is to produce. So, like apart from these graph states, for example, how would we hope to analyze states?
Yes, well, so behind you have an algorithm, right? So using inflation, you can really, okay, you can give it to your computer, say try inflations of order 2. Okay, you have the device dependent and the device independent version of it. So it's a good question for the device dependent. Can you cast it as an SDP? Maybe you can try to find an SDP formulation of it. And then if you have the device independent version, you can assign measurements. So it's not clear which are the good measurements, but you just try measurements. You find the probability distribution. And then there is an inflation formulation, and you can try. So there is also a way to try with a computer. Then, of course, okay, it's quite hard to scale this, right? But yes.
Someone, do you have a comment from online?
Yeah, thank you. Do you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, hi, Marco Oliveira. Thanks for the very nice talk. So the definition that you proposed reminded me of a related definition of generating some arbitrary state using low depth circuits. So this is a setup that let's say I have a bunch of qubits arranged on a line, and I initialize all of them to a state zero, and I want to generate, let's say, the GHD its state, and I can apply gates on neighboring qubits. And the question is that what is the smallest depth of the circuit that can generate this GHD state? And there are some results about that, actually. And for example, as you said, depending on the graph structure, let's say it's a line, using the tools that they have, people can prove that at least we need a linear for the line graph and for the GHC state, we need at least a linear depth circuit in order to generate the state. And also there are some other things, and also there are some recent developments. So people are interested in this problem of whether let's say if we can generate a state with a low depth circuit, it's a trivial state. And people are interested whether trivial states, so there are Hamiltonians that whose low energy states are trivial or not. So,
yes.
So I was thinking of maybe the ideas there can help in your theory, and also the other way, because you are using inflation, and it was really interesting that maybe you can use your ideas.
Yes.
So for that problem as well. Yeah.
We didn't make the connection ourselves, but yes, it's so for low depth states. I guess you have a bound on the dimension. It's qubits, right? It's a circuit of qubits or something like this.
Yes. I'm not sure if
I will check
if the dimension matters or not. Yes. But yeah.
Because the way I see it for now, it's really device independent. So you don't you don't put any bound on the dimension of these systems, right? But you could also okay. But it's a very good connection.
I think maybe the difference is not so much whether you have a bound on the dimensions, but that you allow for shared randomness, no? And these condensed matter people do not. For example, like all the discussion around topological states, no? I mean, there the argument is super old, and you can't generate, you know, topological models with short circuits just because they have long string-line correlation functions, and you. In the Heisenberg picture, you see they can't appear from short circuits. But of course, that argument breaks down if you have shared randomness, because you somehow have to include some genuine quantumness there. I think maybe that's the biggest difference. But I agree, it's a good connection maybe to look at these topological states.
Mm-hmm. I think we need to thank Marco and go on to the next speaker. But thanks so much.